Welcome to La Liga Weekly. I noticed that hashtag Xavi out isn't doing a lot of trades like it was on the 4th and 5th of January after Barca needed extra time to beat Inter City. They've won all of their games since and have conceded fewer goals in their five La Liga games than in that one cup match. They're 8 points clear. Hand them the trophy. After all, when have Real Madrid ever pulled off a stunning comeback? Well, actually, they've never won the league from this far back, and it doesn't help when your striking options are an injured Benzema, out-of-position wingers, and the ghost of Mariano Diaz. They should have signed Mbappe. Why did they think of that? It would have been someone new for Pablo Maffeo to kick. What a weekend of upsets in La Liga. I know, let's pretend that only happens in one particular country and the rest of the world has no concept of a team from lower in the league beating a team from higher in the league. Valladolid's Kyle Larin proves that it's easy to score in La Liga after all. They've lost every single game for a month and he pops over from Canada and wins successive matches as a substitute. But that wasn't the performance of the weekend. What about Oyan Sanset's hat-trick for Athletic on Friday? Not even that. Pere Mia, three goals as Elche, yes, even Elche, won an actual football match. Betis and Celta Vigo played the game of the weekend. One note, Iago Aspas is clearly one of the world's best players at the moment. Check the stats for finishing and chance creation if you want evidence. But for balance, I will add, what an absolute cheat. Luis Felipe knocked the ball out of his hand and he needed 4 minutes of treatment for a head injury. Well played to referee Jesus Gil Manzano for his gunslinger's double sending off of Osasuna's Abde and the former Genesis frontman Peter Gabriel, who now plays for Espanyol. And special mention, of course, to Angel Correa, who, as far as I can remember, is the first ever substituted player to score a league goal. Get to the details of that.
Only Atleti. Yeah. Only Simeone would do that. You've scored off.
Well, actually, let's do the details of that, shall we? Because he scored, didn't he? So he kicks the ball into the net. They give it offside. They drag him off, and he's sitting on the bench looking a bit sulky with his coat buttoned up. Yeah. And then, oh, by the way, it was a goal. So.
And then everyone ran across to the bench, didn't they? And he jumped off the bench with a bewildered look that, can I go back on? It's almost like Simeone dragged him off because he was offside when he scored the rebound as a punishment and then realised that the goal was allowed. And everybody looked bewildered by it, to be honest. It was really weird. It was funny, but it was weird to see a player sitting there, as you say, sulky because he'd been brought off. And it was quite early in the game, 60 minutes. His form was good. He just scored a goal. Even if it was disallowed, you'd think, well, we're getting closer. But he hauled him off before the VAR was allowed and then the players, and he was pumping, sitting on the bench, wasn't he, pumping his fist and wasn't quite sure what to do. So, it was funny. The Aspas one's funny as well. And there are aspects of the refereeing again, which I think do need changing in La Liga, but we'll touch on that later as well.
Even the
Osasuna Espanyol one, I'm not sure why Abde got sent off, to be honest. I'm not sure it was a corner or a goal kick. There was a little coming together. Abde literally didn't do anything. Mm. Peter Gabriel took a sledgehammer to it. and got up and he was the aggressive player, wasn't he? He was the one that was being aggressive, and they've both been booked, and the referee just went bang bang, two yellows, and I thought, hang on, literally Abde didn't, in that skirmish, didn't do anything. He didn't deserve the second yellow.
Referee lost his temper, didn't he? Which is ridiculous as a referee. Because the way he shows the yellow cards is fun, but it was
aggressive.
also ludicrous, wasn't it? He's flapping them around, isn't he? Like, what are you stopping? I mean, you're supposed to be calm. You know, you're supposed to be you're the authority figure. You can't go like he's always going to punch someone if he hadn't had his cards in his hand. Shall we do the top of the league? Right. So eight points, Terry. It's significant, isn't it? Obviously. If a team is 8 points clear, they're obviously doing lots of things right. The discussion, as I said, a month ago, was that Barca were... I mean, there's still a Xavi out community if you go on Twitter, but then on Twitter, that's like saying there's a bloke in the pub who thinks such and such. You know, there's someone on Twitter who thinks literally everything. So they beat Sevilla by 3-0. Real Madrid had lost. We'll get to the details of Real Madrid later. And they took just really solid advantage of it.
Yeah, I think it was an untidy performance initially. Right. I think the first 15, 20 minutes of the game, Barcelona knew what they were up against, and I thought they looked sharp and lively, and they were playing in a way that I thought they would find solutions to play against a team that was not interested in attacking. And we'll touch on Sevilla a bit later in this topic. But then after about 20 minutes, Barcelona started getting untidy. Even Pedri was giving the ball away. He was getting dispossessed as well. And they kind of lost enthusiasm for the task ahead in terms of how they were going to break down this back five, midfield four, and then Nesri playing up front on his own. But in the second half, they were helped, I think, by Sevilla making changes. And Barcelona, the first 20 minutes, they had players making runs in behind from midfield, or Gavi, who we're not sure is a midfielder or an attacking player, but they were making runs in behind. And it forced the Sevilla players to drop off and go with them. And it left space in front of the back five in between the midfield, although the two Sevilla midfield players were trying Pape Gay and Jourdain weren't far away from the centre-back. So it was hard to find that little space in between the defence and the midfield. But they were doing it, Barcelona. But they lost patience with it and then started getting untidy. But in the second half, they those players, all the goals were a result of someone running in behind. Mm. And I think that's something that Xavi must have spoke about at half-time, because if you're playing against a packed defence and midfield and you're static and everyone wants the ball to feet, then you're playing into the hands of your opponents. So I think that the performance in the second half, that little tactical change, of which they started the game doing, they actually repeated that at the beginning of the second half, and it was a massive success. So all the goals have come from someone running in behind. Kessié was teed up Jordi Alba. He got himself into a more advanced position. Rafinha's goal was one where his movement was good to get in behind, and it was the right thing to do. And so Barcelona, and one of those games last night where there was no threat on their goal. Ter Stegen barely touched the ball. And one of those few games this season where he hasn't been called upon to make spectacular saves to keep them that clean sheet. So it's a really solid performance defensively, but they were up against no opposition. The defence had nothing to do. There's one player in the first half, I've made a note of it, who was average position was in the attacking half, and it was Oliver Torres. And it was just, and right. Nesri was dead set on the centre spot. So it looks like he hasn't moved from the kickoff.
I know a few players who I've played with over the years that their heat map would be the centre spot, yeah.
And Oliver Torres was the only one, and he got taken off at half time. It was almost like, no, you're not meant to be in the attacking half of the pitch, you're coming off. And then there was a couple, I think, Ocampos and Brian Hill in the second half, their every position was just over the halfway line. So it was a strange setup from Sevilla. He does alternate between a back four and a back five. But it was last night, it was a back five and two holding midfielders. And it just got a little bit confusing. Interestingly, Rakitic's post-match interview was quite revealing, to be honest. He was quite critical of Sampaoli. Mm. Whether he thinks he's going to get away with that because it was in English. and it was for an English, it was a La Liga TV in English. He was really critical of their approach, saying that we should play our football. We shouldn't be playing like this. It was scathing in his criticism of his coach. So, whether they've got a better chance of going there and playing their normal game, because they've got lots of talented attacking and creative players. They've got good, solid defenders. They've shown signs of improvement. They don't win at Barcelona. I think it's over 20 years since they last won there. But they've got picked up draws, and they've always looked a threat in terms of scoring a goal or two. And I just wonder whether that approach would have been better in the circumstances, as opposed to coming away from the game thinking, well, we didn't give ourselves a chance to win. We were desperate to hold on for a 0-0. And once we went 1-0 down, that was it. So, comically, I have to talk about Jean-Jourdain with the A4 piece of paper. I've never seen anything like that in my life. And essentially, what he was doing was, it was him that was going into a back five. So he was dropping into between the two central defenders, and maybe Rakitic playing a bit deeper. There was no need for a sheet of paper with the lineup on it. Yeah. You caught a quick glimpse of the lineup. Ocampos was great because they gave it to Ocampos and he just ran on and gave it to the nearest player he could find, as if to say, I'm not getting involved
yeah.
in this.
I ain't really all that. Yeah.
Rakitic's captain, but somehow Jean-Jourdain ended up with it. and was running around for 5 minutes, and you couldn't help but notice he kept stopping and looking down at it and then pointing at someone else. And I'm thinking the bench could have given Ocampos one or two players to instruct. They could have shouted to Jourdain, you go and play in the back three. Essentially, it stayed 5-4-1. There was no major overhaul tactically that made you think, oh, what are they going to do now? That was just shambles, absolute shambles. And Sampaoli looked a little bit downbeat last night, didn't he? I've criticised him for being too manic on the bench. Last night, he looked resigned to the fact they were going to lose and get beat, and there was not a lot he could do about it. So it's just a shame. I want to see Sevilla play in a different manner to what we saw at the Camp Nou. So Barcelona, routine stuff in the end. Busquets picks up an injury. They've got a tough schedule. They've got the next 11 games. They play Real Madrid three times and Manchester United twice. So they need those players back. Maybe Lewandowski back to his best. He's finding his way back again after being suspended for almost a month. So it's looking good for Barcelona. Well, it's a significant lead, but I am no way considering that this title race is done yet. There's too much football left to be played. Yeah. And there's another Clásico in La Liga, so that can be cut down to 5 points, couple of draws for Barcelona. If Real Madrid do find some form, if they do find... They've got to find the fight in them.
Yeah,
Real Madrid.
We'll come to that.
Challenge Barcelona.
Come to Real Madrid in a bit. I just want to now patreon.com/LTEL if you want to be a Patreon. One of our patrons is Darren, who said he knows loads of stuff and it's really interesting. But one of the things he points out, there doesn't seem to be a whole lot of transparency from La Liga about the FFP rules. He says that's not a good look when clubs are constantly having to ask where they stand. It's a fair point, isn't it?
Yeah.
They shouldn't be deterring clubs from promoting players from B-team contracts to senior ones. Another good point. It's not looking good for Barca's finances in the summer. The league is insisting on them having to clear 200 million euros. Apparently, La Liga has voted something through that the clubs can only put a 5% of any lever-type sale towards funding the squad. So you can't do all of the tricks that Barca were doing previously. It's just like relentless, isn't it? Given that the mess happened in the past, and it happened under Bartomeu, and no one stopped that regime from putting Barca into that situation, they've done a brilliant job. It's not a finished job, but I think we've all been impressed by how they've played this season, considering the worst case scenario. But genuinely, it's a bit dispiriting to think that they're going to have to cut players again.
Yeah, and in general, La Liga have to be careful that they're not handicapping their clubs in European football, because that's where a lot of the glory comes from. You know, so Real Madrid win the Champions League last season. Sevilla have had fantastic success in the Europa League. Barcelona have had success. Yeah. Atletico Madrid have been to finals. And that is it's a good PR campaign for the league in general. It shows the league is bright and vibrant as opposed to what we're seeing now.
And it brings money in, doesn't it? That's the crucial thing, isn't it?
Exactly.
All they've got now, I mean, I know it's Real Madrid and I know it's the Champions League, but they've got an out-of-form Real Madrid needing to win the Champions League for La Liga to be thriving. They lose to Liverpool, then everyone will be like, oh, La Liga's rubbish.
Yep, exactly.
Which is not true, but if you're literally hamstringing it with overstrong regulations, it just you've got to be careful, haven't you? It's not a free hit for the authorities to say, let's just cut, because there is a consequence of all that cutting.
Exactly. I think Guillaume was trying to explain it last night on the game, that the situation regarding Gavi, where if La Liga have their own way, Gavi will have a zero buyout clause. Where his buyout clause is something like $1 billion on his new contract. And if he can't sign and be registered as a senior professional,
right, then you can nick him for nothing.
Yeah, surely that's not good for La Liga.
Yeah.
I mean, because the chances are, if someone nicks him, it won't be Real Madrid.
Mm.
And therefore, he'll leave the country and probably go and play in the Premier League. So that's not good for the league. I mean, these rules were in place. I've mentioned it many times before, when the TV revenue wasn't fair. And it was something stupid as well. It was something like 70% went to Barcelona and Real Madrid. of the whole TV revenue. Then maybe 10% went to Atletico. And then the other 20% was left split between the rest of the teams, which then meant the rest of the teams weren't particularly very good. They weren't able to pay their players. Tons of players were left out of pocket at the end of every season. And it's since then we've had this redistribution of the TV rights, which has been a lot fairer. It's only right, but it's come on the back of the Premier League doing likewise and La Liga copying them, which means teams do have a better handle on their finances now. They can keep their better players, they can pay the players better wages, and what they promise to pay the players, they actually do. We don't hear of it anymore. So I don't see the need for this real draconian type of financial fair play that only exists in La Liga compared to the other leagues. And I do genuinely feel it's going to be a handicap to the league. It's going to be a handicap to Barcelona and Real Madrid, Atletico Madrid, the Sevilla, Betis. The teams actually generate good income from big support. I mean, Betis had it. Betis get 50,000 supporters. They haven't overspent. I'm sure the wage bill is relatively high. They pay their players well, which they should. But they had problems with six or seven players at the start of the season that they couldn't register. So, and no one could accuse Real Betis in the last few years of spending, you know, extraordinary spending, and their transfer fees have been sensible. I'm sure their salaries are good, but they'll be appropriate to what the club earns. So there needs to be, we don't want it to be too tight. Because it does appear the only club that are not suffering are Real Madrid. I don't know, I have no explanation why they are the only ones that can, as Tebe said, the only club that can get Haaland is Real Madrid. And that won't change for years, he said. And I thought, well,
that's a problem. Don't celebrate it. Yeah.
I mean, what happens if some other club are taken over by, there's no clubs left in the Premier League for, you know, rich people to buy. But what if they come and take over a La Liga club? How would that work then if suddenly there was a, you know, we're not clear on how it works, other than the fact that it's prohibitive for a lot of teams and not just Barcelona. And that could be an issue going forward for La Liga,
and
definitely.
It does seem that, now I know that regulation and laws have got to be quite flexible. So when people start doing different things, you've got to have some flexibility. But at the same time, you do need to know the rules in advance. So that's the balance, isn't it, for any lawmakers? You need some stability, because planning a football club squad should be done over a number of years, shouldn't it? You shouldn't be lurching from season to season.
Unfortunately, for a lot of clubs, it isn't.
Yeah, so the clubs don't do it because they're gambling, but the regulations shouldn't contribute to that. The regulations should be bringing more stability, not creating instability. And the danger with these regulations is that they create instability, because you get to the end of the season and they suddenly say, "Oh, you can't have him."
Yeah.
Well,
we've changed the rules of FFP. You can't do that anymore.
And we thought, well, hang on, I've agreed to sign Lautaro Martinez or something, and they, well, you can't. I think, well, that's not on, is it? That's nonsense, isn't it?
I mean, I looked at Barcelona's work they've done. I mean, I know they got criticised for spending big money, but it was it's shrewd. And they had to do something. They had to speculate because the club was going to go on a slippy downhill path. I mean, you look at the players they bought. I mean, there's obvious ones. I mean, Rafinha was expensive. Lewandowski was expensive. Christensen free. Alonso free. Bellerin was a free. Kessié was a free. They've released and given away a number of players as well to get that wage bill down, including Pico, who's retired. Trincao has left the club. Bellerin, Ricky has gone. Ricky Puig, Pjanic, Braithwaite, Mingueza, Neto, Dest, Longley. There's a lot of players that have been moved off. Umtiti, I'm glad to see. I checked yesterday. He's actually playing football again, so that's good news for him. So they have moved a lot of players on and tried to get that wage bill down. They're doing everything they can. So it's, when you look at the net spend, I mean, they've got money coming in for Griezmann that's owed now because Atletico have gone ahead with that. Coutinho, they got some money for. And then when you compare it to what we've seen in the Premier League, so everyone's accusing Barcelona of this massive spend, but there's nowhere near the amount Nottingham Forest have spent. And let's not even talk about Chelsea and their financial fair play loopholes they find. which is all well and good saying, oh, it's, you know, it's spread out over 8 years. But what if that player turns out to be like Eden Hazard?
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
you know,
it's a massive deal, isn't it?
You've got an 8-year contract. That's,
yeah, yeah.
You know, the transfer fee. And I'm sure the clubs that they're buying from are not particularly pleased or agree to an 8-year loan, basically, for taking their players.
But the numbers involved are so huge that the clubs are thinking, well, go on then. Because it's where did he come from? Was it Mudrick, Shakhtar? Was he? I can't remember. So they're guaranteed. Well, is that, you know, if they're getting, I don't know if it's even payments, but guaranteed like £12 million a year. Right? Yeah. Okay, for some guy who you've forgotten the, you know, well, you never forgot that he played for you. You know, they'll be the
players' wages,
the Kyler
are
Mudrick
not
stand.
The same.
You know,
the players are not looking at and taking. They're not spreading out their payments. They get the 8-year contract, and it's they want what they're worth every year.
Yeah.
So it's the different rules. I agree with you totally. It shouldn't keep changing. And yeah. I don't want to see Barcelona and Real Madrid and Atletico, Sevilla, Betis, the bigger clubs that generate the income because of their fan base. I don't want to see them handicapped by laws that only apply to one league in Europe.
Yeah, that's the problem, isn't it? Because you've got to concede that you are competing with the best clubs from the other leagues, aren't you? So, you know, you've got to give them some just leeway. And like you say, I think I 100% agree with you that the television being more evenly distributed has made La Liga stronger throughout. I think that's a good thing. And it's up to Barcelona, Real Madrid, etc. to generate their own money elsewhere, but not to hamstring them while they're trying to do that, would seem to be. Anyway, what's up with Real Madrid? Terry, they losing 1-0 at Mallorca. Mallorca only ever win 1-0. I thought if I was Marici, I'd have been claiming that. I thought, I wonder if it brushed off his head. But Nacho gets the significant touch on it and it loops into the back of the net. Now, then Asensio misses a penalty. Excuse me. No Benzema, because he picked up an injury in midweek. So there were 29 fouls by Mallorca players, 10 of which on Vinicius. Was this an outrage, or was this Real Madrid going through a tricky spell?
Yeah, it's a tricky spell. I mean, Benzema was missing. Courtois gets injured in the warm-up. But I think Lunin's a more than capable goalkeeper, and he wasn't at fault, and he was not a reason for them getting beat yesterday. He couldn't save that goal, and there was no issues regarding his all-round goalkeeping. But that's a blow, because you want Courtois in goal. Other players are coming back from injury. Modric and Kroos were rested. They do have to rest these players, unfortunately. They've got this insane schedule. They've been in the Spanish Super Cup. They're going off to the Club World Cup. They've got Champions League coming up. Three Clasicos, the two games against Liverpool. I spoke about it the other day, 16 games in less than 2 months. And you do wonder whether, you know, we're looking at this season in terms of an impact on players after the World Cup. We've got this, you know, new scenario that we've never had before. And they're suffering. I think a lot of it is because of that. They've come back from World Cups. Modric played right to the very end, didn't he? The third and fourth place playoff. He's come back. He's an important player. He's 37. You never know when those players are going to hit a brick wall.
Yeah.
And in terms of either getting injured and breaking down, or just not being as sharp as they normally should be. So, I mean, we've seen Camavinga play left back, and he's doing okay, but it's not the left back that Ancelotti wants to play. So it's the team at the weekend was still strong enough to win this game, but we have a league now where, you know, these games are going to be competitive, and Mallorca, we know exactly what they do. They play a back five. They sit deep. They hit Marici and hope that Kane Lee picks something up, or Danny Rodriguez on knockdowns and flick-ons and cause some havoc every now and then in an attacking sense. So it's up to Real Madrid to break them down, and they weren't at their best. I mean, the team that Ancelotti picks is still got far better players than what Mallorca have, and they should still win the game. But we know it's going to be competitive, so you need the right attitude. And they didn't yesterday for too long in that game. They didn't have the right attitude. It's a massive game for Mallorca. They're having a really good season. They have confidence in what they're trying to do. It's a good atmosphere now at the stadium as well. They have a wily old coach who knows how to get under the skin of the bigger teams in La Liga. Everyone rose to the occasion. It's a big game in the season of Mallorca when Barcelona and Madrid go to there and it's a challenge and they've got a half-decent team, they fancy their chances. Was it a scandal, the 29 fouls? No, I think there's more. And that's what you get. If you're Real Madrid, why should teams roll over? You know, it's up to the referee to judge it properly. I think there's a massive issue in La Liga in terms of games being stopped too often for nothing fouls. So I would probably discount half of those 29 fouls that Mallorca made. I would discount, Vinicius got fouled 10 times. I would discount half of those straight away. So if you're getting fouled five times in a game and you're the star player of Real Madrid and you're the biggest threat to your opponents, that, you know, teams are going to single you out, pay attention, mark you closely, be a bit more aggressive than they would be to other players. But that's happened since football began. It's nothing new. And when you're playing up front with Rodrigo and Asensio and you're Vinicius and you are a superstar and you've got the ability and the talent to beat an opponent or two or three opponents at a time, then you're going to come up against old, you know, defenders that want to stop you one way or the other. So I didn't think there was any particularly bad fouls. They're talking about Mallorca systematically picking on him with different players at different times. I'm not sure that is possible, if I'm being honest. I think that there's a level of a degree of, most of it was Mafio and Rayo, who did mention pre-match that they were going to, I'm not sure exactly what the translation was, but they say pay close attention to Vinicius. He's a provocative player, but I don't mind that. But you face the consequences that teams are going to pay special attention to you because you're such a threat and you're a good player. It's happened to Messi, it's happened to Ronaldo, it's happened to the Brazilian Ronaldo over the years. It's happened to all the superstars that play in attacking positions. If you're the biggest threat, then people will try to, you know, one way or the other, put a stop to you. That's the idea of football, you know, stop the threats and try and give your team the best opportunity to win a game. So I didn't see it as a massive scandal, but it's building up where I think the narrative is that Vinicius is being picked on. One or two stories about racism, the chants and stuff, we know that that's just pathetic. It's stupid. When are people going to learn if that did happen? But as in terms of the approach of the game from Mallorca, I didn't see anything untoward about it, to be honest. And if the referee referees the game right and he makes the appropriate punishments, then players will have to stop doing it. If the referee's choosing not to punish those players and they can keep doing it because they've been booked yet, that's down to the referee. So the players will get away with whatever they possibly can. And it was exactly the type of game we expected, wasn't it? Surely that Mallorca were going to be, they've got every right to be aggressive and to show determination. And it's up to Real Madrid to overcome that with the quality that they have because they're a richer club. They've spent more money on players. All the players earn more money than Mallorca players. It's the beauty of football. I didn't see a massive scandal with the approach from Mallorca, I mean, to be honest.
He's undoubtedly been subject to racism from idiot fans, hasn't he? And from comments in the Spanish media. But that doesn't, you know, terrible as that is, it doesn't mean that your opponents have to change the way they target you once you're out on the pitch. And if it's just paying physical close attention, then it's something that's happened before. And I think missing Benzema, I think it's probably significant in it sort of leaves them with one obvious focal point. I think
exactly the case in this game is what I'm saying. If you're playing against Asensio, Rodrigo, and Vinicius, Vinicius is a brilliant player, brilliant footballer. If he wants to be provocative, that's up to him. By provocative, I mean he does get into the referees, he does complain, he does go down easy. He does do the little skills and tricks to try and take the mickey out of opponents. But I've got no issue with that as long as he knows the consequences are going to be if he tries a, you know, this flick and that flick and an opponent is not going to be polite enough to get out of his way and let it be successful, then players are going to be aggressive. But so I don't see any issues with the behaviour of Vinicius or the behaviours of the opposing players. They're not obliged to get out of the way and let Vinicius dance around them and stuff like that. So I say he can be provocative, but
question,
you have to deal with it.
Benzema, how much of a problem is it? I mentioned flippantly that they should think of signing Kylian Mbappe. However, Benzema, just checking, is 35 now.
Yes.
And has had an injury hit season. He's been a remarkable player for so long. Mariano Diaz is one of your great frustrations in football, isn't he, Mariano Diaz, that he doesn't go anywhere, he doesn't do anything. And so he's not the solution. He's getting old now as well. So is it a mistake? I know they wanted Mbappe, and so that was really hard. It was difficult, wasn't it? Because they put all of their eggs in the Mbappe.
No, I don't know if they did. I think there's been this... There has always been, since Benzema has been there, reluctance to buy another centre-forward because Benzema has always been the chosen one. There's been many years where he probably didn't deserve that title.
Yeah.
But now, in the last few years, he has. So I think there's been a reluctance to buy another player that might take the place of Benzema while Benzema is still at the club. So what they've gone for is like a second-tier striker. Mm. So Mariano Diaz was one. Luka Jovic is another one that they gave away. And there were times where Jovic, I thought, was showing signs of promise. So they've always gone for that second-tier striker that's not going to be a competition for Benzema. He's the one that's going to play. And in recent years, that policy has worked because Benzema has been out of this world. But it does get to the stage when he's 35. There was some injury issues last year. And when he wasn't playing, he was missed. If you haven't got an obvious replacement, you're playing Asensio up there, or you're playing Rodrigo or Vinicius. And it's not ideal. It's something that should have been addressed, but they've tried to, but given up on it.
Mm.
So Mariano Diaz is there by default. They've tried to send him out alone. They've tried to sell him. He's refused to go. And he just won't adhere to that. So he's sticking around. It's the last year of his contract. And when he come on, I'm not criticising his quality. He's got some ability. There's a club in La Liga for him. There's a level of club in La Liga for him. It's not Real Madrid. And then when he barely ever plays. And every now and then he comes on and plays, and he's not bad. He's okay. And yesterday he had two or three attempts at goal, decent attempts as well. And you look at the end of the game, and I sort of concluded that they should have started him yesterday.
As a
centre forward.
Yeah.
And he will give you his dynamic. He runs the channels. I don't know how long he would last because he barely plays football anymore. But he would have given them something different to what they had with Rodrigo playing up front there. So you got three attacking wide players, but no focal point up front against a three-man central defence. It needed that centre forward.
Right. A quiz question, Terry, you're not going to get it, so it's not really a quiz question. But everyone listening at home or wherever, how many minutes of action has Mariano Diaz played in La Liga this season?
72.
Lower. Lower. 44 minutes. 44 minutes. Vinicius is the most with 1756. Then Valverde. Alaba, who's injured. Courtois, he's missed more than I realised. And Benzema, where's Benzema? He's low. 1,046. Yeah. So he's started 12 games and he's played most of the 12 games, obviously, that he's played. But yeah, it's an obvious problem, isn't it, for Mariano, for, your second choice. He's on €160,000, obviously. It's not working in the local shop. It's a problem, isn't it, for Real Madrid, who now disappear off to the Club World Cup, of course. So they're not playing next weekend, are they, in La Liga?
Yeah, and then, of course, if Barcelona do get another win, Barcelona play Villarreal away.
Yeah.
We'll come to Villarreal in a minute. If Barcelona do win, that's 11 points.
Yeah.
And there will be pressure on Real Madrid then. At the moment, as things stand with the league race, I don't think it's over. Yeah. I think there's the capacity there for... but Real Madrid to close the gap. But they need to do it soon.
Yeah.
They can't afford to drop too many other points and they need to start playing better. And of course, they need their important players fit and healthy, which is probably going to be impossible over the next couple of months. So it's certainly advantage to Barcelona. But they've got their own heavy schedule coming up, Barcelona. Mm. They've got players they rely on. They're not the same without Lewandowski up front.
Yeah.
So that's we're going to see this. Why it's making it so hard to predict this year where competitions are going to go, how they're going to go, because we've got this new scenario that we don't know how players are going to react after the World Cup.
Shall we do the result of the week? Actually, it's a good weekend, actually. There's some really good games in there. But I want to talk about Elche. You mentioned Villarreal, Terry, that they're a funny old team under Quique Setién. Well, I mean, yeah, they have been for a couple of seasons, haven't they? Inconsistent. But Elche, a win, a 3-1 win, a couple of penalties, obviously. It's La Liga. So are Elche on their way back, or was this a one-off?
Oh, no, I think they've been on the way back. Do you know what they're weird?
You don't think they're as bad as the numbers suggest here,
They forgot how to win a game of football.
Yeah.
Same as Levante last season. I look at their teams, I think they could be better defensively, particularly in the central defence. And they haven't been rolled over on 2 minutes where they've been absolutely annihilated. But they just forgot how to win a game, and this might give them the boost. Are they going to stay up? I was looking at the weekend. Well, they've got a chance. They haven't. They've got to win 10 of their last 18 games to have any chance of staying. That will give, if they win 10 games, that's 39 points. They might pick up one or two draws, but they ain't going to win 10 of the games. So they'll do to win six or seven. Mm. And I need help, actually, from people. Is it going to take more points this year to stay up or less, based on the fact half the division are in a relegation battle? And why is this? Is this because the likes of Real Madrid, Villarreal, Betis are dropping points? The teams at the bottom, we've got Elche that haven't got a lot of points, so are the points then spread out amongst the teams above them?
Right.
But when you look at the bottom half of the division, they're all going down.
Sorry, say that again. We lost you briefly there, Terry. So the bottom half of the division are all in danger of going down, did you say? Yeah.
Yes. Girona win at the weekend. They're 11th. And I think they're 5 points above relegation.
Yeah.
And they're 11th. So the whole bottom half of the division. And I can't work out yet, this is where I need help, is it going to take more points to start? Because most of the teams in and about the relegation issue are around a point a game.
Yeah.
Which is quite high. To still be involved in a relegation battle. If you've played 20 and you've got 20, 21, 22 points, you're probably, normally you would be away from the relegation zone.
Right.
But they're not. They're all in.
Look? I can, courtesy of FB Ref, let's have a look at points per match played. So this season, so name a position in the league and we'll have a.
So 14th.
14th is slightly skewed because there are some teams. Oh, Almeria, and obviously Real played 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. Yeah. So hang on, 8. So, 5th, let's have a look at Espanyol.
Valladolid.
Yeah, yep. so 13th, Valladolid are currently 13th with 1.15 points per match. So, last season, 1.15 per match would put you between 11th and 12th. So it's not radically different. Granada went down with literally 38 points from 38. So we can work that one out.
Yeah, and it crept up. That crept up, didn't it?
Yeah,
at the end of the season,
it often does, doesn't it?
It crept up.
There were loads of seasons, quite a few years ago, where teams were going down with like 40 points and stuff, weren't there? Because towards the end of the season, there was this tradition, wasn't there, of like almost chucking games at the end of the campaign. So a point per match.
The good old days.
Yeah.
The good old days when players weren't getting paid and having to rely on other teams paying them money to win games.
A point per match is Valencia in 17th. So I don't think it's radically, I don't see any radical difference. Have a look at, say, 6th, Betis, 1.55 last season, 6th place. Real Sociedad, 1.63. So the top end, Real Madrid, 2.26 last season, Barca, 2.65. So they're ahead of there. Real Madrid are almost at the same, literally 2.26 last season, 2.25, almost literally the same. Real Madrid, it's Barca who've performed better. And then the other positions, so say 5th. So
Elche not taking points, that was, must mean the points go elsewhere.
Yes, a few away, hasn't it? But then, like you say, at this point of last season, Levante were in a similar position. So I don't think, I don't see a radical.
So if you were saying now, how many points needed to stay up in this season? We're halfway through, most teams have got a point a game.
Yeah.
So are we looking at top 30s? Are we looking in 40s? And that has happened, as you said before.
Yeah.
So it'd be quite fun if, you know.
If I was giving out betting advice, which we don't do because we don't, as literally people are listening to us floundering through this statistical bit, I would guess, similar to last year, I'd say 30, you're in danger on 38, put it that way, which often hasn't been the case in a 38-team league. There are usually some really, two or three or four bad teams. But yeah, I think you're in danger on 38. So someone like Valencia, looking at that, thinking we might only get to 38, is that enough? And then, don't know, might be, but that's a massive gamble.
Yeah. And I guess a lot of these teams are going to be playing each other. So only one team can get the points, or they both only get 1 point.
Yeah.
So that's going to sort the division out. Yeah, but certainly it's going to be hard for Elche. That's the point we're making. I'm pleased to see them get the win. It's slightly embarrassing for the team it is the first to lose. So there were more and more pressure was piling up. And every week they played that they didn't win. Whenever you played Elche, you didn't want to be the team that become the first team to be beaten by a team that should be pretty hopeless.
Yeah.
Elche haven't been hopeless. They've forgotten how to win a game of football. And I have to be honest, I was surprised that they were able to beat Villarreal. I thought Villarreal would win this game, have too much for them. Villarreal, 73% possession, 2 shots on target. Elche had 27% possession and 7 shots on target. Premier scores 3, 2 of them are penalties. So you look at the performance of Villarreal, it did look like a Kike Setien team, that they had lots of possession, no end product. And that hasn't been the first time that's happened recently. They were lucky recently to get a draw, I think it was a draw against Celta. And they completely outplayed, had more possession, but Celta had all the attempts and looked far better. So it could be an issue with Villarreal.
You see some really nice moves from Villarreal. If you can edit any Kike Setien game, it look brilliant if you just edited it to 10 minutes. But there are long periods where it doesn't work, isn't it? You know, every now and again, they put some obviously pre-orchestrated passing move together, and you think, that's really good, and it's really exciting. But it's few and far between.
So congratulations to Elche.
Yes.
I can't imagine what it's like for the players and the three managers they've had. So particularly the players and the supporters to have gone this long. And let's see if they can fight back. But I'm afraid it's going to be too much for them to do.
I've noticed one thing, Terry, just having a quick look there. Fewer draws, considerably fewer draws, I think I'm right in saying. I'll calculate that later, which would explain why you might end up, generally, the average points tally might be higher, obviously, because there's not a set number of points in a football season, because obviously in a drawn game, only 2 points get given out. In a game that's won, 3 points get given out. Right, we need to talk about the rest of La Liga. Let's do Betis 3, Celta Vigo 4, because I've been complaining about a lack of goals in
recent weeks,
Terry, but no complaints. 26 goals so far. Although we did have a little run of 1-0 on Sunday. But Betis 3, Celta Vigo 4, tremendous entertainment, bit of cheating, bit of everything. Fantastic, fantastic fun.
It was a poor result for Betis, I have to say. Ultimately, whilst we enjoy watching the entertainment, it's a poor result for Betis. Lost on Wednesday or Thursday against Barcelona, and then there was another home game, which is unusual. And they started the game off so well. First half, they could have been 3 or 4 nil up. It was really one-sided, and it was only 2-1. And then, I mean, I think it's the goal of the weekend, Strand Larsen.
Lovely goal.
Fantastic
strides.
That's a lovely goal. Looks a talented player, needs to score more goals, and that was the case in this one. And Gabri Veiga is becoming a really important. So his goal just before half-time sort of knocked the stuffing out of Betis, who had been by far the better team, and found themselves going in 2-2 at half-time. And thinking, how are we not 2 or 3 nil up? And Celta were really efficient. I think they sent out 6 attempts on goal and scored 4. It was one of those nights where everything they were really efficient in front of goal. And Gabri Veiga is a super talent. Mm. He is a good young player. It's interesting, actually. I've been watching him closely.
Yeah.
And my fear is he's another one of those players that you don't know where his position is.
Okay.
And when I watched the roundup analysis after the game, I hadn't spoken to Albert Ferrer about it, and he said exactly what I was thinking. They need to come up with a plan where to play him, because if they play him in midfield, the other team have too much possession, And we're not sure yet if he's going to be a striker. His ideal position is just off the front. So you're taking away his defensive responsibilities. You're giving him the freedom to be in a creative attacking midfielder that makes runs forward. But not a lot of teams play. So the number 10, in short, not a lot of teams play the number 10. So somehow they've got to find him the best position. But there's no doubt his talent, and Carvalho has got to find somewhere for him to play, to flourish, because along with Aspas now, he's becoming the most important player at Celta Vigo. He's only young as well. So he's going to be a 20, difficult one for Celta. Yeah. Yes, he's going to be a difficult one for Celta to keep. But I think that's the question mark is, how do you play him and get the best out of him, where he's scoring goals on a regular basis in his first season in senior football? So he's been brilliant. And Aiden gets the goal, it takes it to 4-2. Fekir, Betis get another player sent off. I think it's their 10th. 10th this season, it's his third.
Yeah. No, I've got no, I haven't got that much sympathy for him because he gets involved. So Aspas, they want to take a, I think it's a dispute where it's a throw in or a free kick, isn't it? And Aspas sort of walks away with the ball. So he just runs around and he sort of knocks the ball out of Aspas's hand, who then collapses to the ground.
Yeah.
Somehow comes up with some sort of scratch on his head.
Yeah.
He didn't hit your head. Oh, where's that come from? And it got the whole thing, you know, it's idiotic from Luis Felipe because it allows Aspas to, because it's injury time, isn't it, at the end of the game.
And then we have the melee. Yeah. We have the melee, don't we, pushing and shoving. And the referee feels obliged that he has to do something in the end. And chose that. And then the melee continued. It got a little bit ugly on the bench, didn't it? I think someone else, goalkeeping coach from Betis, got sent off. And so it was one of those things. But again, it goes back to the refereeing and maybe retrospective action. If you see a player, it would stop players doing that.
It
would stop players. Every game I commentate on, someone goes down injured. You're looking at the replay and you're thinking, but that you're not hurt. Mm. You're genuinely not hurt. So get up, get on with the game. Yeah. Stop giving these fouls. Stop allowing players to waste time. Stop. Then that stops you adding 8 minutes on at the end of the Mallorca Real Madrid game.
Yeah,
and that was because of the amount of fouls that were given and the amount of play acting. You know, players feigning injury. It has to stop. I'm feeling quite strong about it. I don't want to hear, you know, big, strong, athletic footballers screaming when they're touched at a corner.
Yeah.
And someone's touched their, you know, put a hand on their back or on their face or on their head when they're jostling for a play. And because we know, you joked about put these players, if you walked around a supermarket or on the tube station, if God help them, if they're on the rush hour on the Central Line in London and people were bumping and barging you, they're
all screaming.
Footballers screaming and going down on the floor. Is that stupid?
Yeah.
Yet we put up, somehow we're expected to put up with it. And referees are expected to put up with it. So perhaps the referees need some help along the way. And it's not just appealing against red cards. But if you sat down and watch a game, the game I did last night, if you sat down and watched that, you could find, I'm guessing, at least 5 incidents of players feigning injury from both teams. And that should be retrospectively punished.
Yeah, that's
and
what...
And then those players will... We'll stop it. They know they get away with it in the game.
We have VAR where we stop a game and ruin all the momentum of the game.
Yeah.
To stop and look and see, you know, was it his arm or was it his hand and all of this, you know. But we're not prepared to then afterwards go back and throw, well, hang on, you've gone down holding your head. Clearly
no
abusing.
Contact with your head.
Clearly abusing the concern for head injuries. That's the, you
exactly.
know, we need to be worried about head injuries, but then players... So it's how cynical is it that then players, and it's not just in La Liga, but La Liga does have a problem with it, thinking, oh, great, there's, you know, we're concerned about head injuries. I'll use that to stop the opposition having attacks.
Ridiculous. And there's lots of instances where you see it and you know that there's not even been contact with the face. Sometimes the contact is minimal. There's no reason to go down rolling around in agony.
Mm.
Waiting for the medical staff to come on to
what
put
must
a sponge
the medics
on your
think
face.
When they come on, they must this guy has been to like university
but
and learned how to
they
treat
don't
injuries.
Know.
Yeah.
But they don't know either. That's the problem. So they go on. They are concerned about a head injury.
Yeah,
so
but they must get there and think, "Oh, there's nothing wrong with you."
Yeah,
I've got to like wash your face.
But it's not always obvious, is it? So, but it can be obvious.
Yeah,
retrospective action on a Monday morning. Someone watches one game. Someone watches another game and pick out. You know, the instance where you feel a player has feigned injury. And then punish them. How you punish them, I don't know whether you'd go as far as a ban. With financial punishments, it soon get on the players' nerves that if they drop to the floor and pretend they're injured and they lose 20 grand, they'd stop doing that.
Yeah.
And if they do it two or three times, they get a 5-game ban or something.
Yeah. Oh, you just start giving an end to retrospective red suspensions or yellow cards. If it's a minor one, and you build up to your ban, and then that's the only way. I think it's got to be a footballing sanction of some sort, isn't it? I think it's the thing to do, because it's done for footballing reasons. It's a footballing cheat. You get a footballing sanction. Shall we do the rest of La Liga? So Atleti, won or draw with Getafe, which is undoubtedly a bad result. This is the game of the weird substitution goal from Correa. Getafe equalised late on to Enes Unal with a penalty. So the heavy footprint of referees in La Liga is evident there, but not evident enough in the first half when Atleti should have had a penalty.
Oh, it should have had a penalty, and Getafe should have been down to 10 men, in my opinion, which was shared by Albert Ferreira's and comms, and I spoke to him yesterday. We both couldn't believe it wasn't given. Morata, Jenna gets booked in the first 2 minutes of the game for a gruesome challenge. And about halfway through the first half, ball goes into the box. Morata's ahead of him and he panics, and he pretty much a half-hearted rugby tackle to stop Morata getting his head to the ball. It was a clear foul, clear penalty. It didn't even, presumably it went to VAR, but there was no delay. At the very least, I thought should have gone and looked at a replay. When you see the replay from every angle, it's a clear foul. So the fact it was ignored was shocking, to be honest. And then alarming to hear that Atletico had not had a penalty all season. If they didn't get one for that, then they should give up. But in saying that, there's the thin line where they failed to kill teams off. They're just the 1-0 ahead for most of the game. And then because of that thin line, you end up giving away an unfortunate penalty. Getafe and definitely didn't deserve anything from this game. Atletico were far better, but they don't create clear-cut chances. They don't finish teams off. And when you're hanging on to a 1-0 lead, something like the handball that Sal gave away can happen. And Zunel finished off tucked away the penalty. And before you know it, Oblak hasn't had to make a save all night, and he's picking the ball out of the back of the net. His team had dominated, but failed to really trouble David Soria in the goal at the opposite end. So a bit of an Atletico-type performance, to be honest. On top, don't create too many chances. They're 1-0 ahead. Yes, Simeone tinkers with it, makes the changes. Correa coming off as soon as he scored, but the goal may be disallowed. I'm not sure why he did that. 60 minutes, 30 minutes to go. Morata was replaced. Memphis Depay, come on, had a half chance. Couldn't take it. So it's a classic Atletico performance. They should have won comfortably, but 1-0 ahead. And you lay yourself to the opportunity of teams to nick something. That's what Getafe did.
Real Sociedad don't normally fall foul of that sort of thing, do they? But they were done by Valladolid, and the man Kyle Larin. So he came from Bruges or Brugge. Never quite sure. Anyone?
No, I know.
Yeah. Well, I think there's French speak. Well, Belgium is the French speakers and Flemish speakers, and I guess you pronounce it differently, don't you? So Brugge. Anyway, he's Canadian. I don't know much about him. He played in the World Cup. I just looked at him. He had a good season for Besiktas, where he banged in a load of goals. He was scoring quite a lot of goals in Canada. Interesting signing, and he's been. We can't draw too many conclusions. There have been players who've started well before, but it barely have started better given the form that they were in. And now they've won two games with him scoring late winners.
Exactly. I mean, his value is he's given. They've won 6 points. Before that, I think five or six games they'd lost on the trot. He comes in, Darwin Machis comes in, and between them, and Darwin Machis made the goal last week. This week, Cole Larin, I worked out in total, I think he's played something like 45 minutes in total and got 2 points. He came on around the hour mark the week before, and he came on for 15, 20 minutes in this game. It's around the equivalent of half a match of football. and he's earned them 6 points, which is incredibly value, incredibly, you know, important for Valladolid. It's given them a lift. It's a massive result for them. They didn't have any other chances and hardly any other attempts at goal. Braus or Stebber were clearly the better team, had the chances, but Valladolid defended for their lives. They held up as held on for as long as they could, and then and get the win in that fashion. So it was a massive win for Valladolid. A surprise result for Real Sociedad. Alguacil won't be too concerned because the performance was pretty good.
They
are still missing players, and you know Atletico only got a point.
Yeah, got away with it in a way, didn't they?
Betis lost. The teams around them didn't pick up, didn't take any advantage, and they just left to brush that off and hope they get some of their other players back from injury. And these matches happen now and then.
Only in the Premier League, Terry. It's unheard of that there are unusual results in any other league. See, people who don't listen to the English coverage won't be familiar with that weird narrative. Every time there's a, you know, every time like Liverpool lose or something, someone on TalkSport will say, "Ah, only in the Premier League." Really, honestly. Anyway, and other radio stations and TV stations do the same. Girona beat Valencia by a goal to nil. When do we start seeing Voro out? Terry, they've sort of given him the job to the end of the season, haven't they? But if he loses literally every single game, at some point you might have to rethink.
Oh, God, yeah. If we're talking five games, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, he's played two, lost two.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say the first one was Real Madrid away. They can tick that one off. But then Girona, a team that are in a similar position to you. You are Valencia. They didn't play bad, I have to be honest. They didn't create too many chances. But they didn't play bad. They don't look like a team that are in crisis, although they are. Mm. But this will only go on for so long before the performances deteriorate. And if they're not getting results while they're playing half decent, then you do worry that they're not built for relegation battle.
Mm. Yeah.
So they're not going to be a team that roll their sleeves up and work hard and fight. They're going to have to be a team that work their way out of trouble by playing well and showing quality.
Yeah.
And that's incredibly difficult when you haven't got confidence. So, five games, max. If they go five games without winning, it doesn't. Voro will go back into the background, so I'm sure they won't sack him. The next manager that comes in should, because he's always there and he always takes over. That's the first thing I'll do is go, well, he's going. It's not going to be as easy to sack me now because you've got no one else coming in.
Yeah, my first signing is a new match delegate and he's out. I've just checked on the XG differential, which is like it's a good underlying stat to say how well a team is playing. They're mid-table. They're actually in the positives, almost the same as Betis, which shows your point that they've basically left a load of points out on the pitch by, you know, not taking chances or giving away silly goals and that kind of thing that you need to do in reality that the stats sometimes don't pick up.
In saying this one, that Mamardashvili had a blinder.
Yeah, well, I think he is okay. I don't think it's him.
He had a blinder. He's beaten by Feinstrike from Borja. I'm glad to see Borja back. Borja Garcia, who's been playing. He was good the last time they were in La Liga and went stable. When they went down, I thought he would have left. Mm. He's had injury problems this year. It was a nice finish. Struani had some attempts. Tati Castellano had some attempts. Mamardashvili was at the top of his game. So it sounds kind of weird. I'm saying Valencia played well, but they relied on their goalkeeper having their blinder to keep them in the game to have any chance at all. So good win for Girona. Valuable points. They're decent to watch. Good atmosphere at the stadium. Tough game for Valencia. Not as tough as Real Madrid away, of course. And Valencia would have hoped to get something from this game. So they need to, you know, find some form and find it quickly. The Voro thing. Half a season to say 25, he's had 25 games in one season as manager, but different circumstances. They're genuinely in the relegation battle. I know it's only halfway through the season, but they need to be decisive with action taken at the club to ensure that they don't just drag along and find themselves panicking towards the last 7 or 8 games of the season.
Athletic Club beat Cadiz by 4-1 with a sunset hat trick. Where did he play? Because one of your points about Athletic
Midfield.
Right, okay.
He played midfield. Yeah. They reverted back to what we were seeing at the start of the season. Yeah. That was a big story in this game. That he played as a midfield player, but allowed to break forward with the other. I think Mikel Vesco was the holding midfield player in this game. So the two of them played together, which meant it's despite Iñaki Williams not playing, it meant all the other players that were. So it was. I'm not sure why Valverde changed during the season. It was a formula that was working well, and he abandoned it. And with abandoning that, they found goals harder to come by. Important players were being left on the bench. Sansa himself has been left out. Mignon has been left out. Berenguer has been left out. And they've got good attacking players. And I was surprised he did that. So Sansa is he's a really, really, really good player. And it's just, again, finding him the position. Same as Gabri Veiga. And I think Sansa is an all-round midfield player that can get forward. Lots of energy, lots of quality, good finisher. So it was a really good win for Athletic Club against Cadiz team who've been playing well. And Gonzalo Escalante scoring to make it 1-1. A return back to La Liga for the former Eibar player, I thought was decent at Eibar. And I think he's going to be a good signing. I think he's on loan. Be a good signing for Cadiz. But they gave a good account themselves, but got blown away by Athletic. And even with Yuri Bocici getting sent off just before the hour mark.
Yeah, lots of red cards. Espanyol 1, Osasuna 1. We mentioned the whole red card, Abde Pierre Gabriel, to give him his real name, Peter Gabriel. So what all draw? Well, tell me something else.
Nothing really. Osasuna took the lead. Probably with a slightly better team.
Yeah.
A draw probably suits both teams, if I'm being honest. Osasuna are not that. They're not big hitters that think when they go to Espanyol, oh, we've only got a point, that's the end of the world. Yes. I think they'll be glad of a point, and Espanyol will be glad to not get beaten. So valuable points for both of those teams, but nothing major apart from that sending off to discuss in this game.
Yes. Monday night means Rayo Vallecano. One of these days we'll discuss Rayo Vallecano again, Terry, on the main podcast.
Yeah, I'd love to.
It's just an extraordinary number of Monday nights. It's so, I mean, well, all right, moaning about little things in La Liga, but it's part of what we do. But they put this every season, but they don't seem to get fixated on a team being put in the same slots all the time. It was Athletic a couple of years ago, wasn't it, when they weren't in Europe, I think, and they kept playing Fridays and Mondays. And obviously someone's taken a liking to Rayo Vallecano, and it's Monday night all the time. And it's I think it's like the seventh time this season or something.
It's not fair on the players. Mm. It's not fair, definitely not fair on the supporters.
Yeah.
And especially if you're a travelling fan.
Yeah.
And I know there are some in La Liga. If you're a travelling fan, then Monday night, Almeria supporters getting up to Raya.
Mm.
Impossible.
Yeah.
Up to Madrid.
Right. If you want to join us on Patreon, it's patreon.com/LTEL. And you can join from a couple of dollars, euros, pounds, however you want to pay us, as long as it's pounds, euros, or dollars. And we will see you for another podcast soon. Thank you for your support. Bye bye.